and we thank council for accommodating a little change in scheduling this morning. We will hear case number two first, Franklin versus State. If the clerk will announce counsel, please.
May it please the court, Mr. Jack Strickland will argue for the appellant, and Ms. Danielle Kennedy will argue for the state.
All right, Mr. Strickland.
Good morning. May it please the court.
Good morning.
I take this as a trick to make me be brief, actually. And if that's the intent, it's working, I will tell you. I'm Jack Strickland from Fort Worth. I'm here on behalf of Mr. Terry Lee Franklin. This involves two convictions out of Criminal District Court No. 4 of Tarrant County. The first for possession of cocaine with intent to deliver, for which Mr. Franklin received a 15-year sentence. And the second, which was tried along with the first, possession of heroin with a deadly weapon, wherein Mr. Franklin received a 5-year sentence. The sole point of error that we bring before the court this morning is the question of whether or not the trial court abused its discretion in allowing the testimony of its fourth witness in its case in chief, Fort Worth Police Officer Bruce Blaisdell. Bruce Blaisdell was offered by the state purportedly to give, quote, background information concerning drug trafficking in Fort Worth, Texas, which in some fashion the state believed would be instructive and illuminating to the jury as it set about trying to decide not what Mr. Franklin's punishment should be, but rather what whether or not he was guilty of the offenses for which he stood trial. Interestingly enough, at the time that they offered Officer Blaisdell's testimony, the state specifically advised the court that they were not offering Officer Blaisdell for the purposes, quote, of trying to demonstrate the intent of the defendant. That would seem to be a bit puzzling, given the fact that one of the offenses for which he was on trial included the specific element of intent to deliver. But nonetheless, the state made that disclaimer. However, it's the position of the appellant that in spite of that disclaimer, that is precisely what the gist of Officer Blaisdell's testimony was. Otherwise, I would suggest to the court that there was absolutely no relevance to Officer Blaisdell's testimony. Officer Blaisdell went on after acknowledging that he had no personal knowledge of this case, had never heard of this defendant until being summoned by the state 1 week prior to trial to come give testimony, to detail in quite lengthy fashion his experiences with DEA, with mid-level to upper-level drug dealers, with international interdictions, with hydroponic marijuana groves, with drug busts in which he had been involved, involving more than 2,000 pounds of marijuana, the concerns that he had and the experience he had with undercover officers working in his capacity having been killed by drug dealers. All of this, of course, was over objection of the appellant. It's our contention that this was an abuse of discretion by the trial court to allow this, because what it did is it injected for the jury's consideration extraordinarily prejudicial information, none of which was relevant, none of which was specific, none of which was particular to this case on trial, and in that fashion that it was not probative of anything whatsoever. And indeed was only unfairly prejudicial to the rights of Mr. Franklin, who was on trial.
What did they say the reason for offering?
Let me quote from what I have included in appellant's brief, Your Honor. For purposes of showing, Officer Blaisdell was tendered as an expert, quote, for purposes of showing the knowledge based upon his training experience in which he has testified as an expert on a number of occasions, I believe specifically in this court, in addition to many other courts here in Tarrant County, about how the drug trade works on the streets of Tarrant County and in the city of Fort Worth, the approximate value of drugs.
Why?
That's the question that we ask, Your Honor.
What does it matter how much he was going to make on the drug?
Exactly so. That's not an element of the offense as to how much he was going to make. And indeed, the whole issue of talking about mid to upper level drug dealers and 2,000 pounds of marijuana. At the time of the arrest of the appellant, he had $86 in cash on him. So there's not much argument, and Officer Blaisdell acknowledged that on cross-examination by defense counsel, that would not be in keeping with the profile that one would expect of a high to upper level drug dealer in Tarrant County or any place else.
Well, That said, can you expand on your four sentences of harmful error?
Well, on my four sentences of harmful error, Your Honor, I do not think that there can be any showing beyond any reasonable doubt that this did not in effect in some fashion the decision of the jury, either on the issue of the guilt or of the punishment that was handed down.
Well, you just got him to back. You just got the one witness to back off, basically through your, I'm sure, piercing cross-examination.
Well, I thought it was pretty good, but it wasn't me, Your Honor. I'm on appeal only.
All right. So how can you just stand there and say, well, it must have been harmful?
Well, Your Honor, how
had before it the facts.
Well,
multiple drugs, the multiple amounts of, more than a user. So what's the harm?
Well, what the harm is, Your Honor, that I do not think that when you start talking about high level drug dealers and officers being killed in the line of duty and how extraordinarily difficult
it is. But none of that happened here. They knew he was an international drug dealer. No officers were killed. None of the things that he was elucidating, which I'm hearing you about what does that have to do with this case.
Exactly.
I'm hearing you. But, okay, the jury's sitting there. They're very intelligent. And they know that, well, that doesn't have anything to do with this. They may have been wondering the very same thing.
I don't know that they knew it didn't have anything to do with it at all, Your Honor. It may not have had to do with the specific instance in which this man was apprehended, but I presume at some point, and I think it's a fair presumption, that as they hear this testimony, they're wondering why it is that Officer Blaisdell has been called in with he's such a high-level, high-stakes undercover agent to talk about this man, unless it had some relevance to the case and the circumstances of this particular individual.
Did he give any testimony about the use of handguns or other deadly weapons?
He did. He said that there was always a concern, of course, because of the number of officers that were killed, about the use of weapons, that it was a risky undertaking to be involved in undercover operations like this. I think another very, very important aspect of his testimony was he cited a figure, I believe, if memory serves, was 604 or 614. Outstanding drug cases now pending on Fort Worth that had originated on the streets of Fort Worth. And that is interjection of prejudicial information that absolutely has nothing to do with the facts of this particular case. And I can only surmise that the reason that testimony is offered is to try and in some manner to engage the jury's concern that we have to put this person in the penitentiary. We have to do so for a substantial length of time, given the number of cases that are pending and unresolved in the city of Fort Worth. It seems to me that this is a disturbing trend to allow this type of testimony in cases when it's not even remotely connected with the offense for which the defendant is on trial. It's sort of trying by what's in the newspaper. It's sort of trying the individual by interjecting concerns and fears of the citizens. And it's precisely what the rules of relevancy, it's precisely what 404B and 403 and even 702 were designed to prevent. And yet, it's sort of trial by inference. It's sort of trial by fear, if you will, and it's certainly trial by circumstances involving other cases and other defendants at other times and other circumstances.
Okay, there was a time. Danielle may not be old enough to remember this, but you and I are. when there was a separate set of rules of evidence for criminal cases. And now there is one set of rules for criminal and civil cases. So when we judge the admissibility of evidence, it's the same whether it's a civil case or a criminal case. And I'm wondering what kind of civil case this would be admissible in, since we only have one set of rules of evidence.
I'm not sure what sort of civil case it would be admissible. First, of course, as you well know, I'm absolutely inept when it comes to the civil side of the docket. But secondly, I one of the things that I do when I think I don't have enough time is I lecture on the question of extraneous offenses at some length for various folks. And the interesting thing for me is you're exactly right. We do have one set of rules, and the civil courts, by and large, look to the criminal courts when they're trying to determine the proper parameters for 404B and 403. If they look to this particular case, they will see that the parameters are quite broad, and I presume that opens the door in civil cases as well. Now, as to the specifics of what kind of civil case it might be admissible in, I have no idea.
So if you're talking about one contractor suing one contractor, then you talk about the worst contractors you can think of in any circumstance.
I suspect you could have somebody come in from the Better Business Bureau and talk about the number of shoddy contracts and the number of rip-off contracts and the number of people that have been abused and how many cases are being investigated by the Better Business Bureau and how much money has been lost by citizens in the city of Fort Worth, none of which is particular or peculiar to that individual case. This might be a harder question, frankly, if we were talking about the issue of punishment. But why the state chose to jump the gun, if you will, and come forward in their case in chief, I'm not quite certain.
If the trial court had not assessed punishment and the jury had assessed punishment, wouldn't you have a stronger harm argument?
Yes. Yes, we would.
Mr. Strickland, what about the state's response alternatively that the testimony was admissible as lay evidence?
Well, I think even lay evidence has to pass some relevancy standards. They're the ones who offered him as the expert. He was not the defense witness, but when they proffered his testimony, they proffered him as an expert specifically, based upon his training experience. He's testified as an expert on a number of occasions. They might have been better served to have offered him as a lay witness to begin with, although I'm not sure that would have solved the problem. But I would suggest
would
to the court.
What relevance would war stories have?
I'm sorry?
What relevance would war stories have in the prosecution of an individual?
I don't believe any, Judge. My war stories are often pointed out to me as having no relevance to what I'm talking about, and I think in this particular setting they have none. I understand what the state was trying to do, but it seems to me that it opens the door to a trial not on the facts with which the defendant is charged, but on all these peripheral issues.
Seems to me that any expert, whether it's civil or criminal, you have a rather broad brush that you're given to establish the background of the person to establish that they're an expert, which is totally different from offering an opinion that this is, in this particular case, an international drug dealer, or it appears that he has ties to international drug dealers. There's not any opinion testimony here that you're complaining about. You're really complaining about his background being elicited and the establishment of his expertise, which to me is a lot broader brush than when you get down to offering the opinions that he's here about today based on these facts and this individual person.
I would agree that there's a broader brush, but I believe that the line was crossed. I believe it's one thing to say that I'm a police officer with X number of years' experience and I've worked a lot of drug cases, but then to start talking about statistics, I don't see how that's any different than a lawyer trying to bring in during his case or during her argument the headlines in the paper about crime statistics that we see that are published by the FBI, or about notorious crime that has occurred in the last couple of weeks in Fort Worth. And we know that's improper. And it seems to me that frankly, in trying to establish that, they crossed the line between qualifying him as an expert and the interjection of highly prejudicial information. It could serve no purpose whatsoever other than to harden the hearts of the jury concerning Mr. Franklin.
But isn't that why in many cases we see the defense stipulating to the qualifications of the expert? So that then really you're just objecting to the substance of the testimony.
Sure, and that's always the good approach if you can do that. But the state's not obligated to accept the stipulation, and it's my experience that the worse it's going to hurt me, the less likely they are to accept my generous offer to stipulate. I don't have a red light, but I have yellow, and I think that's close enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Strickland. Ms. Kennedy.
For the record, yesterday I was licensed 19 years.
Well, congratulations. I wouldn't have guessed it.
So, yes, I remember the laws of criminal evidence and the laws of civil evidence. One of the hurdles that appellant has to jump over here to get to the expert issue is the fact that there was never a relevance or prejudice objection made at trial. There was never a request for a limiting instruction. His testimony was heard in camera first, so there was ample opportunity for appellant to object to, well, it's prejudicial to introduce, to have Officer Blaisdell testify about police officer deaths. You know, that could have all been hashed out in the in-camera hearing before Officer Blaisdell testified before the jury. The fact of the matter is that the only objection was to his qualifications and on page 160 and again on 171 and 172, his only objection at trial was to any expertise. He's not qualified to any opinions that he might render.
Well, state sure took care of that one. I mean, didn't that just open the door to bring all this stuff in before the jury? If he's saying, well, he didn't have enough experience, oh, well, let me tell you about my experience.
That is problematic because at what point at trial, when you're seeking to qualify an expert, at what point does their expertise cross a line between prejudicial and insufficient to qualify him as an expert?
No, that's what I'm saying. Once you object to the qualifications, I think that just opens the door for the state to bring in anything they want to show qualifications.
Well, I don't know about anything they want, but at some point, certainly a relevance objection or a 403 objection would have alerted the trial judge to the fact that the defense thought there was an issue. Or limiting instruction, that this testimony was admissible only for a limited purpose, but that was not requested at trial, so there was no opportunity for the trial judge to mitigate the damage, as it were.
Well, always being sympathetic to the trial judge, I see the trial judge faced with the conundrum when one side objects that this proffered expert is not an expert, and then the same side objects when his background is elicited to be an expert. So the trial judge is sitting there, well, wait a minute, you just objected that he's an expert, now you're objecting to his expert qualification. So
that's
a difficulty to the trial judge.
And it seems why there is an abuse of discretion. That's why there's an abuse of discretion standard, that it's left to the best judgment of the trial court as to where that line is crossed, and the state would argue that that line was clearly not crossed in this case.
And didn't you say that there was an in-camera hearing, so that lot of this took place not in front of the jury?
Right. They fully voir dired Officer Blaisdell outside the presence of the jury, had the objection, which was to qualifications only. And then that was overruled. He was given a running objection as to qualification only. Once again, that was the only objection. And then Officer Blaisdell testified before the jury. Briefly, the deadly weapon testimony was interesting because on page 191, the few sentences that Officer Blaisdell testifies to were that the weapons that drug dealers carry are not intended to be used against the police, which certainly mitigates against it being particularly inflammatory or prejudicial. Also, looking at Officer Blaisdell's testimony about the value of drugs, it wasn't an issue of how much money he was going to make, but the quantity of drugs in this case was not an international quantity. It was a quantity that perhaps skated the line between personal use and possession with intent to deliver. And I think the testimonies to the value of the drug went specifically toward, was this an amount of drugs that a casual user might be expected to have?
Well, the street value, usually they talk about the street value when they sell the drugs, how much money they're going to make on them. And it seems to me that it would have been more relevant to show how much this amount of drugs stepped on this amount of times, or this degree of purity, whatever, would have cost him to purchase, and you know what sort of income the fella had. But there was testimony that this woman saw him dealing, right?
The owner of the apartment complex saw what is consistent with drug dealing activity. He saw many people briefly approach him in his Suburban and then leave after a short period of time. He became suspicious and called the police. There was no testimony that the owner of the complex ever saw drugs or money change hands.
Right, but it was
certainly consistent with drug dealing. I'm not certain, but my recollection of Officer Blaisdell's testimony is that he did not ever testify as to street value or purity, or in this case, what he testified to was users typically only have one hit at a time because of the cost of a drug and their inability to afford more than one hit at a time, and then that combined with the fact that he's got these three kinds of drugs led to Officer Blaisdell's more likely than not that he was a dealer, not a user.
Well, there's been a lot in the newspaper about people mixing drugs, and that's the new thing, mixing drugs. But that just goes to whether Blaisdell was right or wrong about his conclusion. Don't you think it makes a difference whether he's talking about how much money the fellow's going to make, as opposed to how much it costs him to have this amount of drug on him in relation to...
I think, had there been an objection, the profitability issue, shall we say, is closer to being irrelevant than this is how much this quantity of drugs cost, and therefore it's more likely that he was reselling these. If there are no further questions, the state will...
So there just weren't any objections to anything other than...
Anything other than qualifications.
And so that opened the door for the state to prove all the qualifications.
And by golly, they did.
So...
If there are no further...
Counsel got what he asked for.
Perhaps more so. If there are no further questions, the state will rely on her brief and pray the case be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Kennedy. Mr. Strickland, rebuttal.
Just very briefly, I could not agree more with the court, of course, with the benefit of hindsight, that I enjoy that I think a limiting instruction might have been nice. I think more specific objections might have been nice. I'm always worried about running objections, frankly. They scare me. That having been said, it seems to me that it's also a bit unfair to put the entire onus upon defense counsel in this. And by that I mean the court was well aware, I think by virtue of the objections, by virtue of the fact that defense counsel insisted that there be a out of the hearing of the jury, hearing to determine the admissibility of this testimony. The trial court, as we are all aware, is very experienced. The trial court was well advised as to what the concerns were of defense counsel on this. And in regard to the state itself, there ought to be some obligation upon the state, for example, to decide whether it's an expert or whether it's lay testimony. Having disclaimed his status as an expert for purposes of testifying about defense, to now sort of switch horses and say, well, if he wasn't an expert, perhaps he was a lay witness. There's got to be some obligation, it seems to me, on all the parties in the case, not just the defense counsel, to mouth every objection that they perhaps could have and should have in this case.
Maybe the judge didn't have a wastebasket to kick.
Now, see, that's older than 19 years. I know that. If there are no further questions, I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Strickland.
May I be excused?
Yes.
Good day.
Ms. Kennedy, thank you. We appreciate your arguments and your briefing today. Your case is submitted, and you both are excused. Thank you.